Greetings. Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we feature a young lion in the blues, singer, songwriter, guitar player, Jack Whittle. Let's roll. Jack Whittle, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
No, thank you for having me, Ange.
Yeah, I'm glad you can make it. You've got a brand new EP that's coming out, just hot off the presses.
Mid-January, it should be out.
Cool. And what's the name of the record?
New Old Time.
And can you explain the title?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'm a big fan of old-timey music, blues, soul, folk, country, all sorts of old stuff. And this is me trying to create some of that stuff, but not, you know, just doing the standard versions of it, making it somewhat modern. You know?
So sort of giving your own take on it, your own flavor?
Yeah, my own take on it, yeah. And the themes are, some of the themes of some of the songs are also more modern than what would be written from what I'm influenced by.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the songs. I just got a copy and it's still hot in my hands.
Uh-huh.
The first cut, That's All. I mean, to me, it sounded a little bit old-timey and sort of more of a country blues with some slide.
Yeah.
But can you talk about that song?
So that's based off an old, let me think, kind of a traditional tune. The first recording of it, known recording, is Washington Phillips. I think it's from the early 30s. Goes by Denomination Blues. Yeah, and that's talking about, that song in particular is talking about all the various denominations of Christianity and how they should just forget all the little details and just, you know, love Jesus, and that's all. That's all you
sure.
need. There's tons of other versions of it. Merle Travis, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, and this is a modern take of forgoing just Christianity and just in general respecting and loving people. And that's, to me, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, this man loves Jesus, and that's all right. Ain't no reason to start a fight, that's all. That's all. Just gotta have a little respect. I tell you, that's all. Yeah, this woman loves Allah, and that's okay. She can wear a headdress all day, that's all. Yeah, that's all. Just gotta have a little love in your heart. I tell you, that's all. Some worship knowing nothing wrong with that, that's all. That's all. Just gotta have a little love in your heart. I tell you, that's all. Thank you.
And so you wrote, you did all the writing on the record?
I wrote with some friends.
Okay.
It's only four tunes on that record. We recorded more, but only four tunes on this EP, and me and some other people. It's kind of mixed and mashed.
Okay. And where did you record the record?
In a little studio in Bloomington, Indiana. The producer is Jared Coyle. He doesn't have a name for his studio yet, but he's working on it. Jared Coyle in Bloomington, Indiana. Check him out.
Okay. And there's a variety of instruments on the record as well. I think I heard some organ and some saxophone. And
Yeah. I lived in Bloomington for a while. It's South Central Indiana. And I made a lot of good friends and a lot of great musicians in such a small town, pretty densely populated for artistic talent.
There's always been a good music scene in Bloomington.
Well, the population's constantly changing. College towns,
right.
So kids are in and out all the time. So something fresh is always happening, brewing. And it's a pretty encouraging town because the natives there, the older people there, they're pretty artistic people themselves. A lot of them are ex-hippies hanging around. So it's a good environment.
That's excellent. And what about... the next song, The Mixed Drink, I think I recognized that chord progression.
Yeah,
right?
It's a 1-4-5. Yeah, it's a blues.
Yeah.
It's kind of a Killing Floor vibe.
Killing Floor, right.
Yeah, yeah. Which, it's the vibe of that has changed. We used to have a Roomba style. We settled for the kind of more a disco-y Killing Floor on that. Yeah, that's a fun tune I wrote with me and a friend. It's just a bunch of innuendos in a kind of more of a traditional blues style. Innuendos about sex and relating it to drinks.
Well, one leads to another anyway, right?
Sometimes.
But what's the hook is drink me responsibly.
Yes, drink me. Yeah, I'm your mixed drink, baby. Drink me responsibly. It was my friend thought it should be irresponsibly, but I'm I don't know. I don't want to be abused or anything. Irresponsibly is nice, and people should drink responsibly in general too.
And should love responsibly as well,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah. That's cool. And your that song seems to feature the band as well, right?
There's yeah. That's more of a kind of, you know, it's a blues tune, so it's something like, you know, I would do live if I had a big band, we all hang around, we all take a chorus solo or two. It's a fun one. Top shelf. Just help yourself, yeah. I'm your mixed drink, baby. Yeah, I'm your mixed drink, baby. Yeah, I'm your mixed drink, baby. Drink me responsibly. My cocktail style don't never run out. Got an eye for rye. I hear my testifies that I'm your mixed drink, baby. Thank you.
take a double shot while my tide is still high. Maybe got some time, you should try my lime. Yeah, I'm your mixed drink, baby.
Can you talk a little bit about the recording process? I mean, some bands go in and just do it live. Some guys layer stuff. Some guys send files across the country. I mean, how do you make a record?
I don't have a set way because this is the first that I've actually almost finished. So this is a learning process for me. But the way we did this is we started recording live a chord trio of bass, guitar, and drums. And we layered from there. We kept the core bass and drum tracks totally. We used some of the guitars. Some of it we were isolated pretty well. So some of it we took out some of the guitar and put stuff on. And everything other than bass, guitar, and drums was definitely layered at another time. The vocals, harmonicas, pianos, saxophones, some solos.
It sounds very organic. It sounded like it was cut very live, to be
honest.
Oh,
great. Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad we achieved that. That's something I want to have the vibe of, and I'm figuring out how to try to do that.
It's nice to have the tools to do that, but you don't, I mean, I think it's all about the song. It's all, you know, you don't want it to sound like it was overproduced, and it sounds like you guys are all in the same room, you know?
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Well, what about the songwriting process? So you collaborate on some of these songs,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, this just happened over time, or were these special for this project?
Definitely over time. I consider myself like a fledgling songwriter, still working on it. So I've had many projects over the last 5 years or so, and I work with a lot of the same people on some of those older projects on this, and we've wrote together, and mainly maybe two previous bands, stuff that I've written for them kind of ended up on this, and just with various people, sometimes all myself, and I'm working on that. I need to practice songwriting more. It's a skill in itself.
Yeah, I think it's like anything, you know, the more you do it, the more you flex that muscle, the stronger you get.
Yeah, you know? Yes. Yeah, it's something I need to work on. I'm mostly just I think like a lot of blues guys, we're mostly live performers going out to shows and jams, and it's all about just creating that vibe on stage. But learning to write and record in studio is a completely different vibe, different thing that I'm working on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're a young man, and I think as you get more, as a musician, you tell stories. So the more stories you have to tell, the more songs you'll be able to write.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's true.
As well as honing that craft, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got a good start.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then, I know I fall into this category, as well as many other musicians, the Creature of the Night.
Oh, yeah, Creature of the Night. That's a relic from an older band of mine. And it never got released, and we always wanted to do it. I think that one out of those four tunes is the one that kind of stands out. It's more different. It's more of a jammy rock kind of thing. It's also stands out because thematically it's Like Johnny Went Down, it's more of a story and not about real life necessarily. I don't know. It's about vampires and sex. It's about vampires and sex.
And vampires are big these days, right?
Vampires never go up. The vampires are always, like, you know, on the cusp of being in style and out of style. It's something that will be around in our society for a long time.
Pain of plenty.
Let's maybe take it back a little bit to the beginning. I read your bio. You started with the saxophone as a young man.
Yes.
And then graduated to the guitar, if it's a graduation.
I guess I don't know.
Moved on to the guitar.
In high school, I picked up guitars probably 16, 17, right around there, yeah.
And at the time, how did you get into blues guitar? I mean, because I would think as a... You know, what were you playing in high school?
I was playing a lot of the first guitar players I really wanted to be, like, probably for most blues guys, it's like Clapton and Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened because I played saxophone. I was in the jazz band and everything. You know, I kind of like that, but some of it's kind of inaccessible in ways. So eventually kind of gravitated towards blues, which I felt was kind of in between the rock music that my father always listened to on the radio that I heard, that I enjoyed, and the jazz I was getting in high school. I kind of gravitated towards blues in the middle there, and that's what I enjoyed listening to.
Okay. And at the same time, probably your peers were maybe listening to some other music. What was the reaction from some of your friends?
I guess I thought it was a little weird, but... wasn't really that much of a topic of a conversation, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
They just took it for that's
yeah,
what Jack,
yeah, that's
Jack
what Jack
doing.
Does. Yeah, Jack's, you know, listen to, he's playing guitar at home, listening to blues music. They're playing video games and stuff.
Right.
I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I did that instead.
Instead of playing video games.
Yeah.
And then from there, you went to college in Bloomington?
Yeah, I went to IU Bloomington.
And what did you study?
I studied sociology and minored in music and business, which is, I don't regret it yet.
Yeah.
Don't regret it yet.
Good. And so while in college, then you continued to play guitar and played around town?
Yes. It's a good nurturing environment for artists. A lot of older musicians, a lot of younger musicians, decent amount of venues, could be, it's not a big city, so it's decent for its size, venue-wise. And there's just so much, like, resources available, especially in a college town. Like, I've taken, like, electives, you know, just some kind of side classes about the history of soul and jazz, and took some classical guitar classes, and... There's a world class music school there. It's one of they often tout it as one of the best in the world. I really don't know how one measures that, but it's highly acclaimed, and there's a lot of resources available.
So you graduated school, and well, I guess I should preface, you did grow up in sort of Northwest Indiana. But when you graduated school, you did a little traveling, or can you talk about what you did?
So, yeah, I graduated from IU, it was 2014. I hung around. I definitely did a little traveling. You know, I have some family in Asheville, North Carolina. Spent a summer there. I've been, went to, what was it, Holly Springs, Mississippi Blues Festival or something. That was a fantastic time. That was a good little trip I took. Yeah, I hung around Bloomington after graduating. Got some jobs here and there and just really worked on making music. And it's been a good time. Just got back here in the Northwest Indiana area last year.
Mm-hmm. So when you were in Bloomington, did you have your own band or did you just work with different guys or how did that work?
I did have my own various bands. First one was a kind of a blues rock trio. And it was kind of more of a democratic thing. We were all working on music together and it wasn't like the stuff I'm doing now. It was a little more, I don't know, edgy, modern, I guess.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it while it lasted, but just we all had various ideas for things. We're all young, and one of the guys eventually needed to move away and stuff, so it just didn't last.
Right.
And that's how it works.
And there's always something to be learned. You know, I'm sure you got something from that experience.
Oh,
you know?
I learned a lot. Met a lot of great people through it, too. I still play with that bass player in particular quite a bit.
And what's his name?
Steve Laney.
Yeah.
He plays bass on this record.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you mentioned Asheville. So while you were in Asheville, you busked in the streets, and can you talk about that experience?
Oh man, that was a good learning experience. It was so I had so much to learn as a musician and as an entertainer. I think in particular, I think that's like the most important part as a busker, especially. Entertaining people is always important as a musician, but as a busker, it's all about entertainment.
Survival, right?
Yeah. No one's going to care. You know, people are walking here and there. You can't just play a song. You have to be interesting. You have to be heard, even. It's hard to be heard.
Yeah.
There's cars going by. You have to play loudly. You have to sing loudly. I learned to hydrate a lot.
Okay, right.
Yeah, it was hot. Made, like, so little, but that's I got better through it because I could see my tips increasing throughout then.
And just playing all the time has to help too, right?
Yeah, playing all the time, very helpful. I don't do the busing thing, but playing all the time, like now I'm going to, when I'm not playing out, I'm going to jams almost constantly, just got to keep playing.
Right, it's also, I think, helpful to be, you're new on the scene and you want to be seen, so you have to be out there and meet people, press the flesh, network, and you mm-hmm. know, like any business, you have to, you know, meet the people and meet the people in the community, you know.
Well, yeah, I totally agree. It's fun, but it's also kind of a business decision.
You also mentioned the Holly Springs thing, the North Mississippi Hill Country Guitar Seminar.
Oh yeah, what was that? The Hill Country Picnic. They host that every year. I think it's like the most wonderful, not very known blues festival. It's awesome. I'm super into the North Mississippi guitar stuff they got going on there. A lot of
it's like R.L. Burnside.
Yeah, R.L. Burnside, Kimbrough, and right. The modern guys are like North Mississippi All Stars, Cendric Burnside. Super, because a lot of us first introduction to blues is kind of like blues rock. Clapton and Santana and stuff like that, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Then a lot of us get into the more, some of the Chicago blues, Muddy Waters or Howlin' Wolf, and then people are into B.B. King. And then you start searching more, and you find more and more stuff. And like the hippest thing in the last 20, 30 years that I think that's, you know, kind of changed and kind of been rediscovered, in my opinion, the hippest things like that North Mississippi sound.
Right.
Because it's a completely different vibe and feel.
Sure. And it was just like a regional thing that nobody outside that area really knew about.
Yeah. It wasn't widely distributed, like recorded. There are some people like Fred McDowell who pressed records and they were received well, but it never got the traction as some of, you know, his contemporaries.
Right.
And it got cool in the 90s, but there was a documentary, Deep Blues, I think,
right,
that focused around there. And that was huge, just really well made. And it gained attraction. People got interested in it. And R.L. Burnside cut a bunch of weird records with Fat Possum. Or like,
I heard one of like Spencer, John Spencer, something. It's just psychedelic.
Oh yeah,
it's fun. It kind of works. Like it does work.
Some of it works. Some of it doesn't. I appreciate the fact that they just tried to do something different.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah.
Well, not all of it's cool, but yeah, R.L. Burns said some young producers got a hold of him and just did some weird stuff.
Right.
And it's hip.
Yeah. I like there's it. Some remixes and. You know, it's just great music, I think, to start off with. So it's kind of fun to kind of see what you can do with it,
mm-hmm.
you know, with some new technology and some fresh ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's even going back to like Muddy Waters when they did an experiment with electric mud. I don't really, to me, it didn't work. But then, you know, you listen back and you're like, so maybe some of these things did work. You know, they were trying.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not big into that record, but.
Right.
I appreciate the fact that they tried it, because you never know. Like, there's so many things that, like, what if Muddy Waters didn't try an electric guitar? Because he didn't start off with an electric guitar.
Sure.
You know, take risks, try something new, see what, some things will work, some things won't.
Right.
You know?
But you have to try.
Yeah.
Because on the other side, I don't know how many times I've heard music and where it's just the same old thing. A new band is, you know, like, I like what you're doing to put some new energy into some of these older sounds and some, you know, add some modern themes and things like that, because so much music, it's like, here's another guy trying to sound just like Muddy. Here's another guy trying to sound like, you know, that's been done before.
Yeah.
So do something new, try something different, add your own personality, your own stamp to it.
That's what I'm trying to do. You know, I love all those old guys, but I can't be them, you know, I am not that hurt person. I was not raised where they were, didn't have the culture or the teachings that they had, you know. So I'm influenced by them, but I'm trying to be me also.
Tell me about your song, Johnny Went Down.
Yeah, that's a different one. I don't know if you've listened to it yet, but that is actually written completely almost by my friend Steve Laney, who's also playing bass and singing most of it. We're both singing on it.
Yeah.
That's very, I love the chord progression style on it. It's very old-timey jazz kind of feel on it. He pushed me out of my comfort zone.
But that's good.
Yeah, it's good.
You want people like that, to work with people like that.
Yeah, that's what I search for in musicians I play with a lot. Either people who are really, I could really depend on, or people who actually push me too.
And the story in that song?
Woo, that's a good one. Johnny ends in hell, and there's a lot of things that happen. I just recommend listening to it multiple times, because it's spewed out quite quick.
Johnny went down to the corner store, six shooter in his hand. While feeling light from a game of cards, he was down about a couple grain. Figured there's a way for him to get some back, and he knew that if he didn't make his legs go crack. So Johnny went down to the corner store, six shooter in his hand. I said, six shooter in his hand. He could see them cards spinning circles around, feel his hands on the felt it tie. 4th Street riverboat's all in good, but then John didn't own a style. By the time that the rabbit came out of his hole, John was hooked like a fish to a reed cane pole. So Johnny went down to the corner store, six shooter in his hand. I said, six shooter in his hand. But the clerk pulled first. By the time the smoke cleared, Johnny got the worst. Johnny went down to the corner store, six shooter in his hand. I said, six shooter in his hand. Johnny went down. 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 down to the corner store. Six shooter in his hand, I said, six shooter in his hand.
I'm lucky that I'm part of the internet generation, because I've had so much music available to me to listen to that I would never have had, that I would never heard just on the radio before. Because yeah, I'm in the blues. I'm 25 years old. I'm into blues and folk and gospel, and I've been like that since, you know, I was a teenager, and I would not have found that on the radio.
Yeah, yeah, it's hard to find blues on the radio. Except for Confessing the Blues.
WLPR.
So can you think of when you were growing up some people that you heard that just blew your mind, that you were, you know, influenced by?
Growing up, I guess, you know, first, I like, you know, first when I was a teenager, you know, get into Stevie Ray Vaughan and B.B. King and Eric Clapton, you know, some of the big guys. So those are just the names that always get tossed around. Then after that, Buddy Guy, which is probably pretty standard for most people. But Buddy Guy really blew my mind. He was such a performer, yeah, such a showman. Yeah, yeah, engaging, you know. And his performance on guitar was just so ridiculous almost.
Yeah.
It was blistering fast and loud and sometimes super sloppy and nothing's – sometimes it's just random and it's amazing.
Yeah.
You can't help but listen or watch. You know, sometimes people might get annoyed by it, but some people really love it, and I really loved it.
I think now that BB has passed, that Buddy is the reigning king of blues. I mean, who else is there?
Yeah.
He's the guy. He's world-renowned,
yeah,
you know, and just has that history. I mean, you talk about, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan. There would be no Stevie Ray Vaughan or Jimi Hendrix if there was no Buddy Guy.
No, yeah.
You know, no. Just because that approach to the instrument. No, people didn't play like that before.
No. No, that was he was something special, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Him and Bobby Rush, you were talking about like the reigning kings of blues. Bobby Rush is not as well known, but honestly I think he deserves more renown.
Yeah. I just saw him about 3 weeks ago. And he's 80 something. And he looks like he's 42.
He's got to have a wig, right?
But even just his skin, man, yeah, and the way he, I mean, he still dances and moves and he's sharp. It's unbelievable. You know? But the music keeps you young.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how about guitars? What kind of guitars do you play?
Oh, man, whatever I can afford.
Right.
Right now, my main guitar is a kind of a PRS, foreign PRS copy. It's a Les Paul style with P90s.
Mm-hmm.
I like P90s. They have a more, you know, distinctive sound. Just sound a little different than what most people would have. Like a lot of blues players are going to use Strats or Les Pauls or 335s. Just a little different sound. What I really like about the PRS one, my favorite thing is just to just have the volume knob really close to the strings, and I like that. It's just because it's easily accessible. Some people don't like that; they will accidentally hit it stuff. But I like it right there because my hand does. I don't have a big right hand motion, so I don't accidentally hit things.
Mm-hmm.
No, I enjoy that. That's why I wish there were more guitars like that with the volume knob right there. If I had money, I'd just put it. Just move it over.
Just move it.
Yeah.
Just little things like that work, you know what I mean? It feels right. You know?
Yeah.
That's cool. And then do you electrically play through special amps or just what do you plug into?
I got a 90s reproduction of an old Ampeg. It's a Super Jet. It's got reverb and tremolo. It's loud and clean. It's fat. It's a fat loud. Almost too fat. But yeah, it's a 50 watt 112 So it's pretty mobile. It's kind of heavy, but it's not crazy. It's pretty good work amp. Hope it doesn't die. Fingers crossed.
Right. So do you remember your first professional gig?
First professional gig. So first gig I got paid for,
I guess. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay, it had to, very likely some of the first paid gigs, like paid, I mean, I'm probably getting like $5.
Yeah.
Yeah, like really. I was in Bloomington, Indiana at this, it's called Rhinos. It was like a all ages kind of clubbish kind of thing. It was mostly frequented by high schoolers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a pretty lame place to play. Pretty lame place to play, you know, and, there was probably like 5 people there or something, and they all probably had to pay like $5 to get in too, and you just got like a little cut from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good times at Rhinos, though. They were the first guys who were like, yeah, you can play here. And they're like, okay, cool. And we thought it was great at the time, you know, just to have a gig.
Sure.
Just to
sure.
have a gig, you know.
Yeah. You have to start somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I mean, how much are you performing these days?
Weekly.
Yeah?
Yeah, once or twice a week. Sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. But an average probably, yeah, a weekly gig.
And when you're not performing, what are you doing?
Well, I teach some lessons, and I'm currently remodeling a house with my father.
Cool.
Not very, but it's what I'm doing.
It inspires you to pursue your musical career.
Yes, exactly.
And so you front the band and you sing. What are your thoughts about singing? Is there a certain inspiration or people style that you'd like to follow, or you just sort of sing from your heart? What?
So I think for a lot of people getting into blues, they're first enamored with guitar playing.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it kind of grabs you. And there's a lot of blues musicians who are really focused just on guitar playing. And that's what got me into it first. But there's just so many guitar players out there.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to get a gig or get noticed or something, you have to do more than that. Or you have to be just a super stud, and I'm not that guy. So I learned to sing, like, out of necessity, kind of, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So started singing a bit. Really been hitting it over the last few years more, like, actually practicing singing. It's a thing people should do.
Sure.
I try not to alter my, I'm not consciously trying to alter my timbre to try to sound like someone in particular, but occasionally, I love B.B. King's falsetto.
Mm-hmm.
when he was younger, especially. He had a great falsetto. I think that's, often sometimes not used that much in blues music, because people are often focusing on kind of like a really thick, throaty growl kind
right.
of thing. But B.B. King could do that, but he also had a really beautiful sound that he could make. With his guitar, too.
Sure.
It kind of just goes hand in hand for him. So I try to do some falsetto stuff. Kind of, I mean, I have B.B. King in my mind when I'm doing that. And other than that, I'm just... I have been influenced, but really it's me just trying to... Just trying to stay in tune. I practice, you know, I don't practice that much singing, but I try to do a little bit every day, you know, just have the keyboard out and just hitting a note, and like, I'm going to hit that note, I'm going to stay on that note, and I'm going to move up a little bit and play with my range. So it's mostly me just trying to keep a clear sound these days. There aren't specific influences, which is different than for my guitar playing. But yeah, I'm working on it. It's all a work in progress.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think a lot of, like you say, a lot of people start on the guitar and they're focused on that, and the singing is an afterthought.
Yeah.
You know, and now at least it's good that you're rehearsing and practicing and working on that craft and flexing that muscle too.
Yeah, because people outside of guitar players care much more about how the singer sounds
right.
than the guitar player.
Right.
It's a very important thing.
So we were talking before the interview about music business, music distribution. Oh. You had this brand new record out, and you know, we were downstairs looking at my, you know, 33 and a third record albums, and
mm-hmm.
talking about, you know, how music is delivered, how music gets received by people. I mean, what are your thoughts about the future of the music business, or even in the short term, in relationship to your new release?
Oh man, that's such a great question. It's so it's such, you can have a whole thesis trying to answer that. Music is it's being distributed differently than it used to. People are getting paid differently than how they're used to. Personally, for me, especially at my age, I do a lot of streaming, and I've been doing a lot of streaming for the last probably 5 years now.
As a listener, yeah.
Yeah, as a listener, yeah. And before that, people were downloading. I definitely had my fair share downloading for a bit. I listened to the radio quite a bit too. So I think to be relevant, one has to stream their music. One has to have it available, because I think that's how a lot of people, and it's going to increase the amount of people are going to be streaming more and more. So it's we've mentioned this, but it's kind of how people discover music, like the radio was before.
Sure.
So I don't know exactly how I got there, but yeah, people should. It sucks, but that's just to be heard, and you want to be heard, and hopefully people buy things later or go to a show or something. Keeping people engaged is difficult with just music these days. I think there has to be a, in today's day and age, people are so, they're visual. They want right. videos, or they want some sort of social connection. Especially with a lot of younger crowd, like a Twitter, Snapchat, whatever, a bunch of different social media outlets that all have their slightly different niche. People want to feel connected to the artists,
like of various.
Yeah, they want to feel like they know this person, and which is different because it's not just all about the music. You can be about that. You can be all about making music and blah blah blah, and that's fantastic. That's great. I'm glad you found something you love and artistically can express yourself. But if you want people to be interested and engaged, it's not just all about that. You have to have a presence online and physically going to places too.
Are you active on social media?
Not as a... I think that's... Thank you. Thank you. I need that. I need that more. Right. I need that. I think about this stuff a lot, but I'm honestly not.
Yeah,
I'm not very present. There's been a lot of technological difficulties I've had over the last few years. I need to once I get some money, I'm gonna get a nice phone, hopefully.
Right.
But it's something I need to work on more.
Sure. I mean, it seems these days that really all you do need is a good smartphone, and you can, and some time.
Yes, time. Yeah, yeah, and not. I guess not all good. It's not all good, just putting something out is not automatically a good thing. You got to have you can't let every little thing in your mind go out or all the time either.
Right.
It has to be tailored and somewhat thought out, but not too much. It can't be too businesslike, then it just looks like it's you marketing a lot.
Some people have expressed to me that the blues is a dying art. It's a dinosaur music. And I tend to disagree because, I think you're case in point. You're interested about the music, it inspires you, and you're playing blues-based music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are your thoughts about the future of the blues?
I think it's waning, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily say it's dying. But the crowd is getting older. And you don't see many young people around hanging around at just straight up blues shows.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are, they're musicians. They're guitar players mostly. It was like, because there's something visceral about guitar, blues guitar, that people are kind of gravitate to of all sorts of ages. So that's, I think just straight up blues in the kind of context that a lot of people think of it, B.B. King, Muddy Waters, is dying in a way. I don't think it'll ever completely go away, and its influence will never go away.
Sure.
In America, at least, unless we have a nuclear winter or something. blues music is going to be a huge part of. You can hear it. You can hear it in rock. You can hear it in hip hop and R&B.
Right.
It's.
So maybe it's not dying. It's evolving.
That's. I think that's a better way to look at it.
Yeah.
Because some people get too enamored with the past. They want it kind of a, I guess, a conservative view of this music. Like, they want it to be like how it was. They think this is, oh, the real blues music. I hate when people are like, oh, this is real blues or right. blah, blah, blah. No, things change.
Sure. That's for the museum. I mean, anything like that, you know, we'd still have black and white televisions if they wanted to. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of music, I mean, even I know there's a lot of people who love the traditional bluegrass stuff and they want it to stay, you know, all the guys gather around the microphone and like, we have technology where everybody can have their own microphone now.
Right? Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, art, it's music, it's art. It should be evolving and adapting. If you want to stay relevant, something, if it has to evolve and adapt. And it has. You can hear it. You can hear it.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Well, I have absolutely no clue. I have no clue. I could maybe be doing this, like, you know, professionally full time, or I could, you know, find a, I could be back in school.
Yeah.
That's been a consideration of mine. Or I could be working some desk job somewhere, you know, hating my life. Maybe not necessarily hating my
life. Don't do it. Don't do it.
You know, I have no idea. 10 years, you know, I'm 25. So that's, to me, that seems like a lot.
Sure. Well, what do you say we make some music?
All right. Sounds good.
I'm bound to go.